ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। दिस मॉर्निंग वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 1 एंटाइटल्ड द हिस्ट्री ऑफ द लाइफ ऑफ अजामिल। टुडे वी विल बी रीडिंग वर्स 48। मनसैवा पुरे देवा पूर्वरूप विपश्यति अनुमि मनसते पौर्वाम् मनसा भगवानाजा। एंड पपोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। The omnipotent Yamaraj is as good as Lord Brahma, for while situated in his own abode or in everyone's heart like the Paramatma, he mentally observes the past activities of a living entity and thus understands how the living entity will act in future lives. Please respond. One should not consider Yamaraj an ordinary living being. He is as good as Lord Brahma. He has the complete cooperation of the Supreme Lord, who is situated in everyone's heart. And therefore, by the grace of the Supersoul, he can see the past, present, and future of a living being from within. The word Anumim Masate means that he can decide in consultation with the Supersoul. Anu means following. The actual decisions concerning the next lives of the living entities are made by the Supersoul and they are carried out by Yamaraj. So in this particular episode about Ajamila, there are so many wonderful activities. Actually, this episode is full of drama. There is so much variety. We see that in his early life, Ajamila, born in a Brahmin family, well trained by his parents, very cultured, very obedient, following the regulative principles and performing devotional service. Such a perfect situation. Such a nice life. But then, it is said that once we are contaminated by some sort of a association which is not conducive for devotional service, it can be a great hindrance in that path. And this is exactly what happened to Ajamil. One fine morning, he was asked by his father to go and get some flowers, fruits and kusha grass for performing the puja. And on his way back, he just happened to see a low class shudra engaging in some abominable activities with a female who was a prostitute. That one glance, that one sight registered in his mind. He went back home to perform his devotional activities. But that impression on his mind remained. And with the impression of that mind, his desires which had accumulated over the previous lifetimes, suddenly fructified. It was like something which was there in the form of a spark, but this one wave of breeze, that one sight of that activity, was enough to make it into a huge flame. And then Ajamila started contemplating on that. It is explained in the Bhagavad Gita that first of all, we just see something, and then that sight excites and creates so many sorts of reactions in our mind, and then those thoughts gradually turn into actions. Same here. A stage came where Ajamila was not only contemplating, but he actually put it into practice. He got in touch with this woman. He associated with her, developed a relationship with her, and gradually brought her into his own house, neglecting his young and beautiful wife. So strong is the push of lust. Not only that, he started sustaining her and fulfilling all her desires, having children, maintaining them, and performing all sorts of abominable activities just to fulfill their desires. The end, we can understand that right till the old age, he was a slave to this situation. But one wonderful thing happened. He had a son by the name of Narayan. And in his old age, because he was so much attached to this young boy, at the time of death, he just happened to call out the name of his son, Narayan. That's it. This one simple act, which was without any intentions, was enough to save Ajamil. Why? Because when he died, Yamadutas came, and in the previous verses we have heard how they bound him and they were about to execute the orders and take him away. Isn't there enough drama? Suddenly the Vishnudutas appear, and there is a argument between the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas. And Yamadutas are explaining the philosophy how an individual is under the control of the super soul, but he acts according to the three modes of material nature, which are serving under the supreme personality of Godhead. And how according to one's actions he has to get reactions. And how it is their duty on behalf of their boss, Yamaraj, to make this living entity go through those reactions in different types of bodies according to their actions and desires. Excellent philosophy. Perfect. But here is a catch. The Vishnudutas say, yes, fine, what you're saying is true, but you have missed a small point. And that point is that Ajamila has chanted the holy name of the Lord once at the time of his death. And that is enough to free him from all the sins which he has performed, not only in this lifetime, but all his previous lifetimes. So my dear Yamadutas, you have no right to do anything with this living entity. Please free him at once. It's a long story, but I have a longer story to narrate. So this one we will cut it here. Yamaraj is a Mahajan. Lord Brahma is the creator of the Visarga, the secondary creation. Such great personalities. What are we? These great personalities are also at times bewildered as to what the Supreme Personality of Godhead is. We have so many examples. We have the example of Brahma being totally confused and bewildered by the baby Krishna, or a young boy who was going to the fields with his friends. And when Lord Brahma was responsible for the creation, and he created the living entities, the planets, the different species, and then he was wondering, what is the use of my doing all this? Because he knew that the ultimate goal is to get out of the cycle of birth and death. And his job was to make a facility for these living entities to enter into the cycle of birth and death. So he meditated on Lord Vishnu and he prayed and he said, "My Lord, you have given me this service, but what is the use? I will not be able to help these poor living entities. What should I do?" Lord Vishnu appeared before him. He descended on Garudaji and explained that the facility of the material body is given with a chance of misusing it. The original purpose is not to get entangled in the material life. The original purpose is to get out of this material life, but it is also a facility because every individual living entity has a minute independence. And depending upon how the individual uses his independence, he can either use this material body to get out of the cycle of birth and death, or use this same material body for enjoying these material facilities and get more and more entangled in the same material existence. So this facility has been given, but he has also given us the free will. And Lord Vishnu explained to Brahmaji, this is not practical. Don't think that everybody will get out of this material existence. No matter what, the free will always be misused, and hence it is necessary to have this facility of the material world for the living entities. But he said, "Do not worry, Lord Brahma. There is always an escape clause in every agreement. And I have made that available also. It is not that one who comes into the material world is doomed to be in the material world. With the free will he can choose. And even within this material world, there is a place. And that is known as the Purushottam Kshetra." Yesterday, thousands of devotees who have gone to the Purushottam Kshetra concluded their yatra and are on their way back here. I had the rare opportunity of being there on the first day when His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj narrated the Mahima and the Mahatmya of Purushottam Kshetra. And with your permission, I would like to recall some of those wonderful narrations for my own purification and for the benefit of most of you who were not there in Purushottam Kshetra. Lord Vishnu explains to Brahmaji that in this place my murti is of a blue sapphire and it is known as Neela Madhava. In front of the altar is a beautiful kunda that is known as Rohini Kunda. This place is situated to the north of the southern sea, to the south of the Mahanadi, near Ekambravan forest, and there is a Kalpa Vriksha tree right on the banks of Rohini Kund. It is a very beautiful blue mountain. And anyone who goes to this place will be liberated. And Lord Vishnu is encouraging Lord Brahma. He said, Brahma, you should go there. What to speak of the other living entities, but you, Brahma, should definitely go there. So Brahmaji came to Purushottam Kshetra. And a most astounding incident took place. A crow which was flying over the Rohini Kund just came down to put his beak in the waters to quench his thirst. And lo and behold, what did Brahmaji see? The crow immediately became a four-armed personality like the Vishnu Dutas. And he just went up. Brahmaji was totally surprised and shocked. He was astounded by seeing this. And then Yamaraj came there. Right? Today we are talking about these two personalities, Brahma and Yamaraj. Then Yamaraj came there and he approached Neela Madhav and Lakshmi Devi. And he said, while I was coming to this kunda, I saw this measly crow just touch the waters of the Rohini Kunda and immediately attain the Vishnu form. And you have given me this service of punishing the sinful entities. Who can be more sinful than a crow? He said, the Lord, very soon I will be out of business. If it is so easy to attain to the spiritual sky, then there won't be a single punishable entity left for me to carry out my service. So it's a great hindrance to my service. The Lord asked Lakshmi Devi to explain the importance of Purushottam Kshetra to these two personalities. Lakshmi Devi told Yamaraj that, Yamaraj, in Purushottam Kshetra, you have no power. Whatever powers you have of punishing people will not act in Purushottam Kshetra. So in one sense, whenever you feel like taking a holiday, you can come to Purushottam Kshetra, because here you will have no seva at all. Anyone who bathes in this kunda, takes darshan of the deities, you cannot even look at them. At least, not as one of your customers. thousands of Ashwamedha yagyas, if one performs, it is equivalent to just taking darshan of the deities in Purushottam Kshetra. Yamaraj became very interested. He said, please tell me more. So then Lakshmi Devi explained about Markandeya Rishi. Markandeya Rishi had a benediction that he would live for 7 kalpas. We have seen in the recent serials of Mahabharata and Ramayana, whenever somebody goes and pays obeisances to a great personality or a senior person of the family, they give a blessing, Ayushyaman Bhava. Huh? May you have a long life. For some it may be a blessing, but for most of us it will be a curse. Who wants to have a long life? But somehow or the other, the benediction which Markandeya Rishi had, no, for Markandeya Rishi it was a benediction because he used that long life for meditating on the Lord. Definitely a benediction. And he had a life of 7 kalpas. One kalpa is a day of Brahma and a night of Brahma. 7 such kalpas. What is one kalpa? 1,000 cycles of the 4 yugas. Satya, Treta, Dwapar, Kaliyug. One cycle? 1,000 cycles equal to one kalpa? 7 such kalpas. Beyond our imagination. At the end of the Lord Brahma's day, there is a night of similar time period. Huh? And Markandeya Rishi, during the devastation, when there is a night of Lord Brahma, there is a total devastation, annihilation, the pralaya, everything goes under water. There is nothing like earth. It is just a huge ocean with gigantic waves and huge fishes. Markandeya Rishi was floating on these massive waves. It was freezing cold. Sharks and Timingala fishes were all around him. And he was totally exhausted. Totally exhausted. Similarly, he had to remain without any food or without any water to drink. Water everywhere, but not a drop to drink, because it was an ocean. He could not drink that water. He was praying to Lord Krishna. That is what he was utilizing his long life for, in any case. Even under those adverse situations, he did not forget Krishna. And suddenly, he saw an island. On this island was a beautiful banyan tree. And from that direction, a voice came, come here, come here. And when Markandeya Rishi looked in that direction, he saw on one of the leaves of the banyan tree a beautiful bluish baby was lying, holding the big toe between his two hands and pushing the toe in his mouth and sucking it. What a beautiful sight, and what a relief from seeing these huge waves and sharks and Timingala fishes. Gopal glanced at Markandeya Rishi. And he inhaled. When Gopal inhaled, Markandeya Rishi was sucked into his mouth. He went right into his mouth and into his belly. And there we saw the entire universe. He saw Brahma, Shiva, Indra, Vayu, Agni, all the 14 planetary systems. There was no end to it. And suddenly, Gopal exhaled and Markandeya Rishi came out. He came flying out. And as soon as he came out, he started offering prayers. The Lord told him that this island which he can see is Purushottam Kshetra. It is my own personal abode. When the entire creation is annihilated, this island is never annihilated. So the Lord told Markandeya Rishi, you don't have to float about now. You can be on this island and you can worship me and perform all your meditation on this island under this banyan tree. So during the day of Brahma, Markandeya Rishi was meditating and his austerity and his sincere meditation attract the attention of Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva was entirely pleased with him. Lord Shiva told Parvati that I will go and give Markandeya Rishi a benediction. Lord Shiva appeared in a golden form, 10 arms, 3 eyes. Markandeya Rishi offered prayers to Lord Shiva. He is a great devotee of Lord Krishna. So immediately he started offering prayers to Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva then asked Markandeya Rishi, please ask, what benediction do you want? Do you want a long life? Surely he didn't want that. Do you want the siddhis? You just ask, whatever you ask, I'll give you. Markandeya Rishi said, let me be absorbed in devotion to Lord Krishna and his devotees, especially you. That is all that Markandeya Rishi asked for in that situation. And immediately, Lord Shiva gave him the benediction. And since Markandeya Rishi wanted to worship Lord Krishna and Lord Shiva, he was immediately given the facility near Markandeya Sarovar, which is in the area of Tota Gopinath. And there is also the Markandeshwar Mahadev, whom Markandeshwar Rishi worshipped. Lakshmi is explaining this to Yamaraj and Brahma. And she explains that besides this, there is also the Yameshwar Mahadev and there is the Kalpamochana Mahadev. All these are there in the Purushottam Kshetra. She then explains that Neelamadav will remain here till a great storm comes. And when that great storm comes, everything will be covered by sand, even in Purushottam Kshetra. But once again, an exit clause. But she says, there will be a great devotee. He will be a king. And he will perform 1000 Ashwamedha Yajnas. And in Satyuga, the personality, the supreme personality of Godhead will appear in its wooden form, or what is known as the Dharu Brahma. Vishwakarma will carve the deities. And Lakshmi told Brahma, you will come and install those deities here in the temple. Lakshmi ji thus explained the Mahima and Mahatmya of Purushottam Kshetra to Brahma ji and Yamaraj. All this, by the way, is being narrated by one Jaimini Rishi to an assembly of sages. And Jaimini Rishi is telling them that after Lakshmiji narrated this, Brahmaji went back to his abode. But now, the curiosity of the rishis is awakened. After having heard so much, they want to know from Jaimini Rishi more about King Indradyumna and about these deities which he said would be in the form of Daru Brahma. Jaimini Rishi explains, Indradyumna Maharaj was a perfect Vaishnava. He was charitable, full of compassion. He had complete control over his senses and mind. He was eager to honor and worship Brahmins. He was like a father to his citizens. The sinful people feared him. For them he was death personified. But those who were devotees, King Indradyumna took complete care of them. He was young, strong and beautiful. He was a Raja Rishi. He was always worshipping Lord Vishnu and he had no attachment. One day he came out of his deity room and prayed to the Brahmanas, "Please tell me, where can I see Lord Krishna in this world?" He had this hankering desire, the intense separation, and hence always meditating on how he could see Krishna. One of the mendicants who had assembled outside his deity room, he was a simple mendicant with tattered clothes, turban around his head. He stood up and said, "Dear King, since my earliest childhood, I have traveled to all holy places in Bharatvarsha. But please listen to what I am saying. The holiest of all holy places is Purushottam Kshetra. It is to the north of the southern sea, it is to the south of the Mahanidhi, it is near the Ekambra one, and there is a beautiful blue mountain which is known as Niladri. King, once a crow was flying over the Rohini Kund, just touched the waters and he achieved liberation. You must go there, you must go to Purushottam Kshetra." Having heard this, the king was fully enlivened and satisfied. Immediately, he wanted to find out where this place is. So he called his head priest and asked him to find out this place, which is to the north of the southern sea and to the south of the Mahanadi. The priest, in consultation with his mendicant who had given the directions and the explanation about the place, got all the details from him and the priest had a brother, a younger brother by the name of Vidyapati, whom he completely trusted. And he gave this service to his brother and he asked him to go and find the murti of Neela Madhava. Find out where it is. This brother of the priest, Vidyapati, took a chariot and he left Avanti Desh in search of Neela Madhava. On the way, he came to a place which is today known as Bhuvaneshwar. There he saw Ekamravan forest. He had a bath in the Mahanadi river and he entered Purushottam Kshetra. When he entered Purushottam Kshetra, he could hear some voices, some people talking amongst themselves. He could not see them, but he could just hear their voices. These were simple tribesmen who are known as Shabaras. They are farmers who take care of pigs. But what were these farmers speaking to each other about? They were not gossiping. They were not talking of some mundane earthly matters. They were glorifying the Lord while speaking to each other. And their leader, Vishwavasu, he somehow saw Vidyapati and he welcomed him. He showed all the love and respect that one should show to a guest. Vidyapati explained to the king of the Shabaras, Vishwavasu, that he is on a mission. He has been sent here by King Indradyumna with a specific purpose. The king has sent him to find where is Nilamadha, with the idea that the king himself will then come here and surrender his life and just worship this beautiful deity. Vishwavasu felt very sad. He said, "We are poor farmers. We just take care of pigs. Our only life and soul is worshipping Nilamadhav. If the king comes here and if he worships Nilamadhav very opulently, then obviously Nilamadhav will be attracted by their services, devotional service. And he felt that he will and his tribesmen will lose that opportunity of serving the deities. However, he surrendered and he said, whatever is the will of the Lord. So he personally brought Vidyapati to the deep forest. There are different versions of the story. Some say that he was blindfolded and taken. He put some mustard seeds, and when the mustard seeds grew, he found the way. He had married the daughter of Vishwavasu, Lalita. Be so as it may, Vidyapati climbed the mountain named Niladri, and there he saw the Kalpavriksha tree, the Rohini Kund, Nilamadha, blue like sapphire, four arms, and then they returned. Vishwavasu offered opulent gifts to Vidyapati. Vidyapati was really surprised because he had lived with Vishwavasu and he knew what simple life they were leading, and they were not so rich. So he asked him, how is it that you are able to offer such opulent objects to the Lord of which you have given me the Mahaprasad? How do you manage it? Even King Indradyumna may not be able to worship the Lord in such an opulent manner. Vishwavasu said, there is a secret. During daytime, the Shabaras worship the Lord. But at night, the demigods come down and they worship Nilamadhav. And they bring all these opulent offerings and they leave it behind, which becomes a Mahaprasad for all of us. And it is this Mahaprasad which is I am giving you. He says that Indra brings a garland, the flowers of which never degenerate. And they are so fragrant, so beautiful. And he gave one such garland to Vidyapati. as a Mahaprasad. Vidyapati said, I don't want to leave this place. It is so beautiful. I would like to spend the rest of my life in Purushottam Kshetra. But immediately he realized that he had come here as a service and he had to go back as a service and give the information to King Indradyumna. So he circumambulated the Niladri mountain, and while he was circumambulating, it was already dusk and he could hear the beautiful musical instruments played by the demigods for worshipping the Lord. His heart would not allow him to leave, but somehow he returned to Avanti. King Indradyumna received him and paid obeisances, gave him a wonderful place to sit, and immediately Vidyapati offered the garland to the king. And Vidyapati gave him the entire report. He gave him all the details about his journey, how he had met the simple Shabaras, how their head personality was so kind to greet him, and he took him and gave him the darshan. In every minute detail, Vidyapati narrated what experiences he had gone through. King Indradyumna, upon hearing this, immediately wanted everyone in his kingdom to immediately go to this place. He said everyone must shift permanently to Purushottam Kshetra. The Brahmins with their yajnas and with their mantras, and the Vaishyas and the Shudras and the Kshatriyas, everyone just pack your stuff and let's all go. Complete plans were made for this big yatra of the entire kingdom of Avanti Desh to go to Purushottam Kshetra. The chariot was ready for the king. And just at that moment, Narada Muni came. Narada Muni appeared and he said that I was in Badrikashram and Naranarayan told me that you are going to Purushottam Kshetra. So is it okay if I come along with you? Can I accompany you? King Indradyumna welcomed Narada Muni and both of them sat on the chariot and proceeded towards Purushottam Kshetra. Narada Muni explained to King Indradyumna the process of devotional service. There are many processes of being purified, but bhakti is the highest. However, bhakti may also be practiced in the mode of goodness, in the mode of passion, in the mode of ignorance. For example, if it is done out of anger, in a bad mood, it is in the mode of ignorance. If it is done with some material desires, it is in the mode of passion. But the transcendental mode is where it is without any material desire. Ahaituki apratihata. King Indradyumna wanted to know more from Narada Muni. They began their journey. In the meantime, as soon as King Indradyumna and Narada Muni left Avanti Desh, it is said that there was a big sandstorm in Purushottam Kshetra. The Shabaras came to see the deity, but Neelamadav had disappeared. This is happening in Purushottam Kshetra. King Indradyumna does not know about it. The Shabaras and predicted that King Indradyumna will re-establish Neelamadav in the form of wooden deities. Now, Narad Muni and King Indradyumna are on their way, and when they entered Utkala, or present-day Orissa, they first saw the present-day Bhubaneswar. And there was this beautiful forest of Ekagravan. The king thought that this must be Purushottam Kshetra because it was so beautiful. But then Narad Muni explained to him, no, not yet. This is not Purushottam Kshetra. This is Bhubaneswar. So King Indradyumna is asking Narad Muni, can you please tell me more about this beautiful place? This place also looks very, very holy. So Narad Muni explains that long, long ago, Lord Shiva was performing tapasya. And for performing tapasya, he would go to the Kailash. Parvati would feel lonely. And because she was lonely, she would go to her mother's place. And jokingly, her relatives asked her, Parvati, is everything okay between you and your husband? You seem to be coming to your mother's place so often. Is there some problem? She says, no, it's perfect. We have no problem. But then she told this to Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva said, okay. Lord Shiva, as we all know, doesn't have a residence for himself. He is the master of this material world in one sense, but he doesn't own anything. He doesn't even wear clothes. And he lives near crematoriums. He covers his body with the ashes of the crematoriums. Matted hair. Snakes around his neck. Scorpions for his earrings. Such a Lord Shiva, when he was requested by Parvati to have a place to stay, immediately obliged. And he made a beautiful residence for her. It was an entire city which he created, made out of jewels, palaces, lakes, gardens. And this place he called Kashi. It is a place where two rivers meet, Varuna and Kashi. Hence the name Varanasi. So in this place of Varanasi, Lord Shiva and Parvati resided for many, many kalpas. Then they returned to Kailash. Kashi was then ruled by many kings. They were all named Kashi Raj because they were the kings of Kashi. And here is an interesting story about one such Kashi Raj. He happened to be a good friend of Pondrak. We already saw at the beginning of this class what the effect of bad association can be. Ajamil, just by associating with one prostitute, almost ruined his life. And here we have another king by the name of Kashi Raj, who has the association of Pondrak. Pondrak claims that he is the original Vasudeva. And this Krishna in Dwarka is a Sahajya, just a mere cheap imitation, a duplicate. And he sends a message and he says, immediately give up those four things which are holding in your hands. Shankha, Chakra, Gada, Padma. The original ones are with me. So please do not be a cheap imitator. And he says, if you do not do so, I will personally come
and cut those out of your hands. He sent this message to Krishna. Then Krishna said, you are most welcome, please come. Ponrak was, he had himself put on a golden helmet, imitation Kaustubhamuni, and two arms. He had tried to make his eyes look like lotus flowers. And then he took his army to Dwarka. He was totally insulted because the message which Lord Krishna sent back to him was, I am looking forward to your visit. You will become food for the jackals and vultures and dogs. So because he could not tolerate this insult, along with Kashiraj's army, he invaded Dwarka. And there was a war. Krishna cut off the head of Ponrak and then cut off the head of Kashiraj and sent it back to the city of Varanasi. When this head came flying, the citizens of Varanasi thought it is Krishna's head. And they were jubilant that their king has become victorious. But when they looked closer, they found it was the head of their own king. So then, the son of Kashiraj, his name was Sudakshina, he wanted to take the revenge on behalf of his father. He was the next Kashiraj. So he wanted to kill Krishna and he began to offer sacrifices to Lord Shiva and appeal to him. Lord Shiva, as you all know, is Bholenath, Ashutosh. Whatever you will ask, he will just grant it to you. So this Kashiraj told Lord Shiva that I want to go and kill Krishna. I want to destroy the Yadu dynasty. Lord Shiva said, okay, I will follow you with my army behind you. Don't be afraid. And thus they go, there is attack. And by the mercy of Lord Shiva, a monstrous demon, which is totally fiery, is born. This demon is known as Dakshinasura. So with this army of Kashiraj, army of Lord Shiva, with this fiery demon, Dakshinasura, who's a big fiery ball, they come to Dwarka, and Krishna was playing chess at that time. While he was playing chess with his queens, the residents saw the demon and came running to Krishna and asked for his help. Krishna just called for his Sudarshan Chakra and asked Sudarshan Chakra to go after them. Sudarshan Chakra went after the demon. The demon became afraid and he ran back to Kashi. So once it has been created to kill, it has to finish its job of killing. So if it could not kill people in Dwarka, it had to go back to Kashi and kill people over there. And he burned the entire city into ashes. Next, Sudarshan Chakra killed and cut the head of Kashiraj. And then it went after Lord Shiva. Bad association. This is what you get. Lord Shiva used his Pashupati Yantra. And there was a severe clash between the two. Pashupati creates so much heat. Lord Krishna negated it with the astra which gave constant rain and cold. Both fought. Pashupati ran for his life. Ultimately, Lord Shiva came to Lord Vishnu and begged for forgiveness. Krishna spoke. He said, Shiva, you know my powers. Why did you then take the side with Kashiraj? Demoniac, insignificant, filthy worm named Kashiraj? And you sided with him? Lord Krishna went on to say, in my opinion, on this creation, the person who hates me most is none other than you, Shiva. This is what is being said to the topmost devotee of Lord Krishna. What about us? Lord Shiva's heart cracked. In his heart, Lord Krishna is his Lord and Master. How could he hear such words from him? He began to cry. He begged for forgiveness. And then he tried to explain, my Lord, I am always associating with these people in the mode of Tamaguna, all the hobgoblins and the bhutas. That is why my intelligence has been covered. Look at what I have done. I need your association, my Lord. Please let me be always residing close to you. So Lord Krishna says, okay, my personal abode on this planet is Purushottam Kshetra. So if we are neighbors, you will have more opportunity to associate with me. So right at the outskirts of Purushottam Kshetra, you please reside in this place, which is now called as Bhubaneswar. This is how Narada Muni explained to King Indradyumna the importance of Bhubaneswar. And then the Lord is explaining to Lord Shiva about the importance of Purushottam Kshetra, which he said he wanted to convince him that this is my abode and I am giving you a place right next to me. And he wanted him to realize what a great benediction he was giving him. So he said, anyone who lies down in Purushottam Kshetra gets the benediction of offering millions of dandavats to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If any of you have ever gone to Jagannath Puri for a yatra, and if you have spent your night sleeping there, you have gained tremendous benefits already. Anyone who sleeps there gets the benediction of performing perfect yogic samadhi. Anyone who walks there with every step gets the credit of circumambulating every holy place in the world. Those who have not gone to Jagannath Puri, please, don't miss your next chance. Anyone who speaks there, whatever they speak, even if it is just prajalpa, they get the credit of offering beautiful Vedic hymns and prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What more do you want? Anyone who eats there, even if he eats fish, gets the credit of eating the sacred remnants of Havisham, that is the fruit of a yajna. When you get the paisam after performing the yajna, that is known as Havisham. So anyone who eats anything in Purushottam Kshetra, even if he eats fish, but we have Krishna Prasad, so we don't have to worry about that. Lord Krishna was glorifying Purushottam Kshetra as if he had hundreds of mouths. He said that denizens of the heavenly planets, when they look down and they see the creatures in Purushottam Kshetra, they may be animals, birds, insects or any living entities, but to these denizens of the heavenly planet, they all seem to be four-armed Vaikuntha forms. Anyone who worships the Lord there will attain the supreme destination of life. That is my most favorite place to reside, Lord Shiva. And just adjacent to this is the Ekamravan. And you can eternally live there as my neighbor. Because you will reside there, it will be named after you as Bhubaneswar. Anyone who worships you there will become most dear to me. Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai. So Lord Shiva and Parvati eternally reside in Bhubaneswar. It is said that the deity of Lord Shiva at Bhubaneswar is a special Hari Hara form. And the pujaris understanding the mood of Lord Shiva over there, they first offer the bhoga to Lord Krishna and then the remnants are offered to Lord Shiva. This is the Mahatma of Purushottam Kshetra as explained to these personalities, Lord Brahma and Lord Yamaraj, by Lakshmi Devi, by Jaimini Muni to the various sages, and by Narada Muni to King Indradyumna. There is much more. We are running out of time, so we'll end here. Thank you very much. Granthra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.